May it please the court. The lower court's decision in this case totally ignored this court's well-established and long-standing precedent in multiple areas. First, in the important area of forum non-convenes, the lower court paid lip service to the Cryo-Made factors. It admitted that it was hard to find for DuPont under these factors, especially in view of this court's decision in Candlewood, which involved Argentina, her predecessor's decision, Judge Slights, in Abu Aton, which involved asbestos exposure in Saudi Arabia, and this court's decision in Eisen, which involved DuPont. But then in a result-oriented ruling, she simply ruled for DuPont. The only basis, really, when you look at the ruling is on page 80, when the lower court found that DuPont should not have been sued in the first place. You do not decide the factual outcome of a case on forum before any discovery, especially at the forum stage, and that was what was done here. Unless this decision is reversed, it will call into question this court's longstanding law of forum. The factual underpinning of the decisions will cause questions of litigants as to whether they can choose Delaware, whether now the objective test has simply been replaced by a subjective test, whether the trial court thinks it's a viable cause of action. And this is not just a case where the sole basis of bringing in the defendant was the fortuity that it was incorporated in Delaware. We're talking about DuPont. This is where they have their international headquarters. We're talking about a case which alleges that things occurred here in Delaware, that the decision-making in terms of what happened in Argentina had its genesis in terms of what happened here in Delaware.
I'm a little surprised at how starkly you read this, because the trial judge went through each of the factors, and Eisen says that this court gives discretion to judges if they apply those factors carefully. I'm trying to struggle which factor weighs in your favor, because as I understand the judge's ruling was, you can't get the same kind of discovery in Argentina. You were trying to do a test case. You have a situation where the evidence is all in Argentina. This is just the first case you're going to bring. And you're asking the Delaware courts to essentially create a novel ruling of Argentina law, which will then apply collaterally to other cases. And she went through all the standards, and in her discretion came to the view that the Eisen standard was satisfied.
Your Honor, that one, it is, the standard is very clear. It's overwhelming hardship. It's a very tough standard. And in terms of things such as all the evidence is in Argentina, that's simply not the case. The allegations talk in terms of things happening here at Stein Haskell Labs. The whole root of the court's mistake was buying the assumption that this was really a case against DuPont Argentina, that we were simply dressing it up in the forms of DuPont International. Yes, if this case was totally against DuPont Argentina, she'd be correct. But that assumption is not warranted by our complaint. That was simply not giving us the benefit of the doubt. This is a case which arises out of DuPont's decisions here in Wilmington in terms of how asbestos is going to be used in their subsidiaries. It is, we say that DuPont provided safety services to this subsidiary, and those are allegations very clearly. DuPont sent their people down there. An awful lot of the discovery has to be here in Delaware. That the court simply, and the court even, and this court has decided in cases such as Warburg that issues such as access to records and discovery cuts both ways. Even those access to evidence and discovery in Argentina, such as medical records, such as witnesses, the plaintiffs have the same burden as DuPont's. In fact, the plaintiffs, being individual citizens, probably have a greater burden than DuPont.
Well, even if you're correct about the trial court's decision on forum nonconvenience, how do you get around the, or how do you explain away the decision on having a necessary party, the failure to join DuPont Argentina?
Your Honor, the Delaware Supreme Court, Delaware lower courts, and the U.S. Supreme Court has been very clear in terms of Rule 19, a joint tortfeasor is not an indispensable party. Certainly, and all the decisions that she cited really dealt with contract cases, cases where the party who was not there was the party that did everything. This is a case where it's simply at best DuPont Argentina is another joint tortfeasor.
Let me stop you there. If I recall correctly, the trial court said your claim talks about everything that was done improperly in Argentina and your client's exposure to harmful products and so on, asbestos. So tell me how this is a claim against DuPont that does not necessarily have to include what DuPont Argentina was doing.
Your Honor, in terms of every single asbestos case that is tried here in Delaware, in every case I've tried, the employer is never a party because you can't sue the employer because of workers' compensation. Yet the and many times the defendants there say it's the employer's fault. They can do the empty chair, but they are never the indispensable party. At best, they are a joint tortfeasor. It's not uncommon in tort cases where you do not have every single person who is involved in the tort that's there. That actually helps the defendant to be able to...
Okay, but I would like you to be specific. I hear you when you say that you don't have to sue both tortfeasors. Tell me about your claim, about what you allege the wrongdoing was and how it is differentiated from what DuPont Argentina was doing.
Yes. At trial, we would not even have to say that DuPont Argentina did anything. They were an innocent party. That they had it simply, and I asked DuPont's own expert of this, if you contract...
Wait. Answer my question, please. Okay. Tell me what you allege that DuPont did that is states a cause of action that is not dependent upon what DuPont Argentina did.
DuPont provided inadequate, this is paragraph 12 of our complaint, inadequate safety services to the plant as an independent third party being contracted to provide inadequate safety services to the plant. DuPont improperly trained people. DuPont provided raw asbestos. DuPont made certain that they were...
Excuse me, are you alleging that DuPont trained the people who were working in Argentina?
Yes, that's at paragraph 15, and that is DuPont's own expert said that that stated a valid cause of action under Argentine law.
What does paragraph 15 allege?
Paragraph 15 alleges, and this is A39, trained management staff and employees of DuPont Argentina in unsafe ways. And failed to provide proper training. Number 17, because of EI DuPont, there are no warnings as to the safe handling of asbestos. 18, DuPont performed industrial hygiene audits, which were inappropriate and unsafe. DuPont monitored the safety and production of facilities. It's almost, you have an independent party coming in to do work, and they did that work.
Didn't the trial judge find that you did not satisfy the Superior Court's particularized pleading standard because all you say as to all of these is at all material times you do not identify anything more specific than at all material times. You do not identify any human being who did that. It's simply the broadest possible allegations of parental overall control with, frankly, common factors. I'm trying to understand how it's particularized and how the trial judge made an error in finding that it didn't satisfy the requisite procedural standard.
The standards in terms of particularized, there is an asbestos standing order signed by this particular trial judge as well as her predecessor, Judge Slice, that said what had to be, and that was actually to have something tougher in terms of this, and what you had to have was your exposure in an employment context, in a household context. If it was in an employment context, you had to say the years, the employer, the location, and what your activities. We did that. We provided with that. We met the standards that had been set up and have been followed in every single case. And in fact, the benzene litigation, which is cited, Judge Slide said that when we have all these out-of-state cases, we're going to make the standards tighter, and those standards then were reflected in this standing order. Garcia, which is a case Judge Jordan handled, dealing, again, a toxic thing, it meets those particular standards. It's very clear in terms of when you have to plead with particularity in an auto accident case. You can't simply say the driver was negligent. You have to say he was negligent driving at an unsafe speed. You don't have to give the exact speed on that. Those evidence comes in with discovery. The question is, does DuPont have fair notice as to what the claim is against it? And DuPont certainly did, because DuPont's own expert could look at these things, 14 and 12 in specific, and I asked him the question, does that state a valid cause of action under Argentine law? And he said it did. So DuPont is very clear DuPont's own expert understood what the basis was, said it stated a valid cause of action. As to 15 and 17, monitoring, he said if DuPont had assumed safety, that would state a valid cause of action. And he admitted that you have to assume those pled facts as being true. So DuPont, and if DuPont had any question whatsoever, didn't understand, was not in a position to file an answer, they could have filed a petition for more definite statement. I might point out this is a little different than in Chancery Court, where in Chancery Court you have a Delaware Code 8220, books and records, you can go in and get pre-trial discovery. There are multiple cases where they say, especially when the defendant has the evidence, that you don't have as high of a burden to have every detail as to who the defendant. We say there were actual DuPont people coming to the plant. We don't know the identity of those DuPont people. That's information our clients have given us. Discovery will give the identity. Certainly DuPont would know the identity of those people. So I think it's very important, and this is the crux. Again, the trial judge could not escape from the fact that DuPont's own expert, not only on my cross but also on redirect, admitted that we had stated a valid cause of action. The only way the trial judge could escape and to grant the motion to dismiss was, again, to say we sued the wrong party, saying that what we said here we really didn't mean, that this really was a veil-piercing case. This was a case we really were going against DuPont Argentina, and a case against DuPont Argentina should be in Argentina. I agree a case against DuPont Argentina should be in Argentina, but our complaint in the very beginning made it very clear, the caption for its own separate and distinct tortious conduct. One other thing that I think is very important, and one can get confused, is all this reliance on direct participation theory. There's only one part in our complaint at the end where we actually use the word participation, and that's on A4976, where we say DuPont as a participant in the decision-making, but they are still a responsible independent party. Most of our allegations dealt with independent actions that DuPont could do even if it had no corporate relationship whatsoever with DuPont Argentina. I went through in terms of at the hearing making it very clear that if DuPont Argentina had simply hired a safety company, a company that had a lot of experience in dealing with asbestos, to give them information as to how to handle asbestos, and that company provided those safety services negligently, you could sue them under Argentine law. That is really the gravamen of our complaint. And we cited particularly the Boggs case, because the Boggs case was a Sixth Circuit case where they talked in terms of a company that had provided unsafe safety services in a coal mining situation. They happened to be the parent, but that was simply a fortuity. They were providing those services. In that case, the subsidiary was, or the defendant was trying to say, we're immune because we're the parent. Bogg said, no, you can be a parent. You do not get immunity simply if you do independent actions. The other case is the Forsyth case that the court cited. That dealt with a subset, what they call direct participation liability, not in the Supreme Court case, where really the parent gets involved in the day-to-day management of the company. That's a more involved. We plead that, but that's not the real center of our thing.
How do we figure out which of your claims is brought under the direct participation theory and which are brought squarely and directly against DuPont? Or are you abandoning the direct participation theory?
Your Honor, I'm not abandoning it. Most of our claims, and you really, where we talk about its own independent negligence, I mean, really every single claim, if you go in the first three or four pages, is all independent actions. 12, 14, 15, 17, those were all cases that we, instances we asked DuPont's expert, does that have an independent cause of action under Argentine law? He said, yes, it did.
But isn't that also the same place in the complaint that you're talking about Boggs and the direct participation theory?
Boggs is not a direct participation theory case. It doesn't use the term. There is nothing in Boggs at all. And, in fact, the lower court judge, when he even sent the letter about direct participation theory, didn't even mention Boggs because Boggs is not a direct participation theory. Boggs is a case where another company, just happens to be a parent, provides safety services and does it in a negligent or wrongful manner. There's nothing in Boggs that Boggs was running the company and being jointly participating. Forsyth is a case that deals with more direct participation. We never alleged direct participation. Our theory is much more independent throughout. And as I say, in all candor, I only see one place where we even talk in terms of E.I. DuPont participating along with, and it's just right at the end. So we were not going, it was the court that was trying to put us in a narrow area in terms of direct participation theory. And I might also point out that there was no evidence in the record that DuPont, that an Argentine law would not allow it. The best they, our two experts said it would. Their expert only said, well, there's no case under that, and there's no need for it because you can sue the employer in Argentine law. Argentine law is very clear when you engage in conduct which hurts simple negligence, and we provided with that. So the question in terms of it's a red herring in terms of the direct participation theory. And I have no problem if the court says we cannot proceed under that because 95% of our case and all of our particular counts that have gone through deal with DuPont's own independent action.
You're into the time you reserved. Do you want to continue or?
I would prefer to reserve my time unless the court has an immediate question they'd like to cover. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Phillips.
Good afternoon, Justice Holland. Jack Phillips on behalf of E.I. DuPont Dieter Moores. The inherent problem with Mr. Crumpler's underlying assertions is that he has admitted that DuPont Argentina owned the facility in question, operated the facility in question, and employed the person that got injured as a result of the ownership and operation of that facility. So try as he might, he cannot jam those facts into a situation where DuPont USA can control anything at that facility without the underlying assistance or acquiescence or negligence of DuPont Argentina. And that's what he's trying to do in every one of his counts.
Let me stop you, because if I understand it correctly, opposing counsel is saying one of our claims is that DuPont was providing safety services and safety training and did that in a negligent fashion. Why is that not a claim against DuPont individually?
Well, just to be clear, Justice Berger, the allegation in the complaint does not really say that. The allegation in the complaint simply says DuPont provided safety services. Doesn't say they provide them negligently. Doesn't say what they did that, in those safety services that then caused injury to the plaintiff. So that's the problem. That's part of his pleading deficiencies. He hasn't pled a direct cause of action in that manner.
Well, would you concede that a claim that says that DuPont was providing safety services and did so in a negligent fashion by failing to advise DuPont Argentina of the hazard of airborne asbestos, or failing to advise them that they need to wear special protective gear, or that sort of thing, if that were stated in the complaint, would that state a direct claim against DuPont?
Not under the theory he tried to allege in the lower court, Your Honor. He tried to, as much as he's trying to disclaim it now, in the lower court he was arguing direct participation.
If there were a complaint out there that said what I've just said, that DuPont provided safety services to this company, that DuPont was negligent in providing those safety services in that DuPont failed to advise of the dangers of airborne asbestos and failed to advise of the need for protective gear and five other things that DuPont failed to provide or advise with respect to safety features. Would that state a claim against DuPont?
That might state a direct liability claim against DuPont, but that was not pled below.
Okay.
That was not what Mr. Crumpler was asserting. He was asserting direct participation. The lower court wrote Mr. Crumpler twice to advise him as to what the hearing standard was going to be. That was direct participation. I followed that up with a letter to the court to confirm that that's what the experts were supposed to be able to address. And at the beginning of the hearing, I again confirmed that that's what we were there for. And not once did Mr. Crumpler object to or assert that that was not what was going to be argued or should not be argued. He did not assert that that was not what he pled.
Can I get your understanding of the distinction here between direct participation and direct services?
Yes.
Which is
yes, Chancellor.
What I understand you to be saying is if what was originally pled was this was a subsidiary of DuPont, it was an indirect, wholly owned subsidiary, and that if what is alleged is that the plant was just, it was a subsidiary, but it was run in conformity with DuPont standards and they understood how it was run, that would not suffice to give rise to liability of the ultimate grandparent.
That's right? Correct, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
No, and whereas this is not a case where the subsidiary hired DuPont to come in as some sort of third-party contractor to provide safety services, which I suppose that would even raise questions about whether that was a derivative suit the sub had against the inadequate contractor or thing. But you're saying that if all that is alleged is the ultimate parent did the normal things that a parent does in relationship to a subsidiary, it does not give rise to a cause of action?
That's what I'm saying, Your Honor. If you look at paragraphs 13, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, all these paragraphs are doing are asserting things that are a common interaction between a parent and a subsidiary. But the direct participation theory of liability requires that the parent behave in some eccentric manner to control the operation of the subsidiary. And it's clear that DuPont USA did not do that in this instance. It's also clear that there is no way that DuPont USA could parachute into DuPont Argentina with its asbestos workers and asbestos products and start using and installing asbestos in that facility that's owned and operated by DuPont Argentina. It couldn't do that. Nor could it parachute in and start telling Mr. Rocha what he has to do. It can't do that. So without the underlying assistance and intimate involvement of DuPont Argentina, which makes DuPont Argentina an indispensable party. Yes, Justice.
So if DuPont provided management, engineering, and safety services to DuPont Argentina in a negligent fashion that caused injury to Mr. Rocha, DuPont USA is not on the hook for that.
No, I'm not saying that, Your Honor.
What paragraph 12 alleges.
Paragraph, yes, but again.
And my question is, paragraph 12, isn't that enough to get the plaintiff through a reasonable conceivability standard?
Paragraph 12, Your Honor, is, first of all, let me back up. Paragraph 12, I do not believe, sufficiently states a direct cause of action in that it is not particularized enough.
That's 9B.
That's right. So they have to do more than make a general allegation. They have to provide some who, what, where, and when. And all they've done is make a conclusory allegation. And that's the problem. But even if you want to look beyond these pleading deficiencies or irregularities, even if you assume that there is some cause of action potentially pled, that does not escape the indispensable party finding of the lower court, which it gets reviewed on an abuse of discretion standard, nor does it escape the forum nonconvenience finding of the lower court, again, an abuse of discretion review standard. And if you look at both of those findings, they are both based on the fact that there is no way this person could have been injured without the active participation of DuPont Argentina. And, Mr. Crumpler has admitted that DuPont Argentina was the owner, operator, and employer here. That means it clearly had some control over and participated in any wrongful conduct that allegedly caused this plaintiff's injury. Therefore, it was a primary active participant. There's a very clear, distinct body of law that has arisen in the context of deciding whether the subsidiary is an indispensable party in a suit against a parent involving that subsidiary's actions. Regardless of how plaintiff labels DuPont's actions or whom plaintiff credits with taking certain actions, it is an unavoidable fact that plaintiff is trying to hold DuPont USA liable for alleged wrongful conduct that DuPont Argentina necessarily participated in or allowed to occur. That makes it an indispensable party. The court went through each and every factor under 19A and 19B very carefully and found that those factors were satisfied.
Let's assume that DuPont USA is an indispensable party. Does that mandate dismissal?
Excuse me, DuPont Argentina is indispensable.
I'm sorry, I misspoke. You're right.
So under 19A, Judge Abelman found DuPont Argentina to be a necessary party. Under 19B, she found DuPont Argentina to be an indispensable party because a judgment rendered in the absence of DuPont Argentina would be prejudicial to both DuPont USA and DuPont Argentina. A finding adverse to DuPont Argentina regarding the conditions of its plant, its use of asbestos, or its conduct towards its employees would prejudice DuPont Argentina in the actions that are ongoing down in Argentina, filed by workers from this same plant, the class action against this plant. And DuPont Argentina is not protected in this lawsuit by virtue of DuPont USA being a defendant because their trial strategies diverge. All DuPont USA has to do to defend itself is prove that it was not involved in the decision-making process or controlled the actions that caused the injury. DuPont Argentina, on the other hand, would want to prove that it did nothing wrong. DuPont USA does not have to go that far to protect itself. Therefore, there's prejudice to both parties without both parties being joined. The court also went on to find that there is no protective measures the Delaware court could institute because the Delaware court could not control what happens in Argentina. Plaintiffs can get a verdict here, then turn around and go down to Argentina and do whatever they want, and the Delaware court can't control what happens there. They can make a second recovery. Delaware court can't do anything about it. The court also went on to find that a judgment rendered in the absence of DuPont Argentina is not adequate under the way that term is used in 19B. That is, you cannot render whole justice. You cannot dispose of the entire case.
So your position is that the dismissal could be affirmed on that basis?
Yes, Your Honor. Certainly could.
Without regard to forum nonconvenience?
Correct, Your Honor. Yes, because in fact, a single proceeding is available to this plaintiff down in Argentina where he can make a complete and full recovery. All the experts agreed that this plaintiff could go to Argentina and make a workers' comp recovery and a tort recovery. And the lower court found that, because all the experts agreed, that the plaintiff had an adequate remedy down in Argentina. The only evidence of record is that the plaintiff could also sue DuPont USA down in Argentina if it has a cognizable claim.
And is part of your argument, essentially, and I read the trial judge's opinion, this, is that the third, you know, the factor about the applicability of Delaware law under Crowley Married is phrased in a way that says which the courts of the state more properly should decide, which is sort of phrased in the plaintiff way. I assume that what you're invoking is that has a reciprocal, it has a reciprocal principle, which is there are some cases where a defendant should have the ability to have actual, not ersatz, law applied to its situation, and that what your friends are trying to do is essentially set up a test case where instead of the Argentine courts determining this important issue of the respective responsibility of parents and subsidiaries, the Delaware courts will predict this, and then it'll be collaterally used in multiple other cases against DuPont, where DuPont is to somehow serially bring up witnesses for 30 or 40 different cases and be subject under not an Argentinian law doctrine, but under the Delaware court's prediction. Is that essentially what you're arguing in terms of why there's overwhelming hardship?
Your Honor, it is. And after Judge Abelman went through each of the Crier made factors, she then turned to the fundamental problem here, and that is that they want to sue DuPont USA for activities conducted by DuPont Argentina. And Judge Abelman said, look, on top of all the other undue burden that DuPont has specifically demonstrated here, you cannot allow a situation to occur where DuPont, as the corporate parent, is being sued for its foreign subsidiary's actions when you cannot join a foreign subsidiary, and where you have to apply foreign law time and time again, and each time you try to do that, you need expert testimony. The expert testimony turned into a fiasco. They're trying to bring on their expert testimony in video teleconferencing. At one point, somebody's coaching somebody off screen, and you know, it took 6.5 hours to present what should have been 3 hours of testimony. And as soon as Judge Abelman finished that hearing, Mr. Crumpler tried to amend his complaint to allege yet a new cause of action under Argentine law, which was then going to cause another series of expert reports in order to advise this court as to what that Argentine law might possibly be. It makes far more sense to go to Argentina, where you have a cause of action, where you have a court system versed in its own law. You've got an Argentine resident pleading a case under Argentine law, and he wants Argentine justice. Why should it be rendered in Delaware? Why should Delaware be the one bearing the burden and the cost of trying all of these cases? And Mr. Crumpler, on top of that, releases a press release saying, this is just the first of a wave of South American, African, and Asian cases he wants to bring here. So now Delaware is going to be the place of jurisdiction where, under Mr. Crumpler's standards, where you can bring anybody in the world that can sue a parent corporation for the activities of that parent's foreign subsidiary. That ought not to be the law of Delaware. That ought not to be what the Delaware courts are for. And when you look at the public interest factors, Mr. Crumpler mentions Abu Anton. Judge Sleitz looked at the public interest factors and found at that time they were not sufficient. But he did say that if they should change, they might be sufficient. And in fact, they have changed. In the 30 years of asbestos litigation in Delaware, there's always been one Superior Court judge assigned. There's now two Superior Court judges assigned because the burden is so great. Cases are booked throughout the entire calendar year of 2014 and are now being booked into 2015. Prior to this year, the most cases filed in any one year, most asbestos cases filed in any one year, were 250 filed in 2012. Year to date, that is through November 4, there have been 650 asbestos cases filed in Delaware. There are now over 1,000 asbestos cases pending on the docket. They're being disposed of at 22 cases a month. When you do the math, you can see that the docket is being overwhelmed. And on top of that, Mr. Crumpler wants to bring in these foreign cases simply on the basis of suing the parent because this foreign subsidiary allegedly did something wrong. That's not the law. That ought not to be the law, and Judge Abelman clearly found that even if you call all of the other Cryer-made factors even if you say it's hard to distinguish, at the end of the day, the thing that pushes this case over the top was a finding that you cannot allow a plaintiff to simply substitute the parent for the sub, to sue the parent and then create a situation where the sub is not available, is not amenable to service of process, is an indispensable party, and treat the parent as if it's the one that created or caused the harm. When, in fact, if you look at these underlying facts, as I said initially, there is no way DuPont USA could simply land at this plant in Argentina and do these things without the Argentine subsidiary participating in them. And that's what makes the Argentine subsidiary an indispensable party. There's no way to plead around this. Mr. Crumpler, try as he might, as soon as he admits that the plant was owned and operated by DuPont Argentina and the plaintiff was employed by DuPont Argentina, he has given up the ability to say that DuPont USA could control this plant to such a degree that without any happenstance or interference from DuPont Argentina, he simply can't walk into the plant and take it over. And that's what he would have you believe happened here. And that's not what happened here. So there are no reasonable set of circumstances from which this court could infer that DuPont USA alone caused this injury. And therein lies his problem. So,
well, his response, at least to one of the problems, is to argue that that DuPont is what he alleged makes DuPont USA a joint tortfeasor, and for that reason, DuPont Argentina is not an indispensable party.
Yes, Your Honor, but under Mr. Crumpler's analysis, there would never be a joint tortfeasor that was an indispensable party. Never. And that can't be the law, and in fact is not the law. Because if you look at, as I say, there is a distinct division among the cases. The cases Mr. Crumpler relies upon are cases that involve a situation where the subsidiary's conduct was not a predicate to the cause of action asserted against the parent, but was merely ancillary conduct to the parent's liability. That's not the situation here. This plaintiff could not have been injured without DuPont Argentina's participation. And therein lies Mr. Crumpler's problem at all times. In all these counts, he cannot get away from the fact that this subsidiary corporation owned and operated the plant and employed this plaintiff. It therefore had to have some control over this plant, what was done at this plant, how it was done, had to have some control over this employee, this plaintiff, how he was treated, what his job was, what he was exposed to. Their conduct is inextricably intertwined, and the cases DuPont relies upon are situations where that was indeed the case, and that's the sharp distinction. And it's a clear distinction. If you look at the cases that DuPont cites, the Polanco case and the three cases from Puerto Rico, those three cases from Puerto Rico, one found that the subsidiary was not necessary, the other found the subsidiary was necessary, and the third case tried to harmonize them. And the harmonization was the fact that what I just said, that is, if the subsidiary is a direct participant, an active participant, then the subsidiary is a necessary party. And that's the situation here. Because ask yourselves, how could DuPont USA possibly go into this plant and do these things without some cooperation and participation from DuPont Argentina? As soon as that occurs, their activities are inextricably intertwined because it's the combined actions then that cause this injury. And in fact, Mr. Crumpler,
you used the word and necessary party, but as I understand your argument, it really is they're an indispensable party.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Justice Holland. So, if there's no other questions, I'm
thank you.
Content. Thank you.
Under our complaint, if DuPont is an indispensable party, there would be no asbestos litigation, there would be no toxic litigation at all in the United States. Because you don't have when asbestos is brought in, we had the Seaford plant, which this court has had a number of cases out of, where we sued the sweeping compound manufacturer. There's evidence the asbestos was not coming in without DuPont, the employer, having some control over it. Of course the employer has control over what's being bought, what's being done. Every single case, the employer has never been an indispensable party in any tort cases. At most, they are a joint tortfeasor, unindicted co-conspirator. And in terms of the law I cited, and this is on AR 27, we actually had a case that this is a Hercules case, out of the Havig plant. Havig was the employer. Havig was not joined in the suit because you cannot join an employer in American cases, and it's still not an indispensable party. And I would just ask the court to take a look at the jury instructions which were given by Judge Gebelein. The jury instructions had direct participation, but they also had Hercules assuming responsibility for occupational safety. Hercules, being the parent company, came in and provided occupational safety services and did them wrong. Also, with regard, Mr. Phillips seems to say everything would be fine if it just came down to Argentina and there would be full justice for the plaintiff. He skips one very important fact. The plaintiff's case is against DuPont International or USA. DuPont, unlike in the Eisen case, has not conceded to jurisdiction in Argentina.
DuPont's expert, though, I believe, said that if you can make out your cause of action before the Argentina court to show acts by the DuPont in Argentina, then the Argentine principles of personal jurisdiction would be sufficient for the courts to exercise personal jurisdiction over Argentina, and I believe your experts did not rebut that at all.
But DuPont has not, and the court did not find that DuPont has consented to jurisdiction.
Why does DuPont have to consent? That's a different question than whether you have a fair opportunity, if you can plead out your case before the Argentine courts, for there to be legal principles where they can exercise the jurisdiction over DuPont. Because then what you're saying is, in order for DuPont to win their motion, they have to consent to something that they may not even agree to, which is that they did anything in Argentina that is sufficient for the Argentine courts to exercise personal jurisdiction over them.
If DuPont does not consent, we don't have a level playing field. They can't come into this court and say, everything's fine, they can sue us in Argentina. They say they can, that's what Mr. Phillips said, and then in Argentina say, no, you can't sue. We can sue DuPont here in the United States. Our claim is against DuPont in the United States. We have jurisdiction over against DuPont. That's why my clients came to the United States, because they have jurisdiction over the company that they felt was responsible because of the double standard, because of its superior knowledge in terms of doing things. There is no showing. DuPont has, unlike in the Eisen case, which is very critical, and that was a major decision in the Eisen lower court case, DuPont had actually conceded jurisdiction and said they would be subject to suit here. And so they have not. I think that is very critical. With regard to the public interest, I would simply point out judicial notice. Our courts are doing very well. All that we have coming in next year, there will only be one asbestos judge. It is simply a transition. There have been no asbestos cases tried this year, two last year, one the year before. Actually, the number of asbestos cases being tried are less than when it was only Delaware plaintiffs. I represent all the Delaware plaintiffs. Our conditions have not been jeopardized by this. To say that the Delaware courts cannot handle international disputes is simply wrong. The Delaware courts are competent to do that. There is nothing in terms of this court even had a special panel when the cases first came in to see if there was a problem with the out-of-state litigation, and that panel concluded there was no problem. So, and furthermore, with regard to public interest, this judge below did not conclude that public interest was a problem. With regard to cause of action, I think Justice Berger saw it very clearly. Number 12 and Vice Chancellor Noble, we say DuPont provided safety services in a negligent manner causing injury. We had all the elements, and their own expert said we had all the elements. As to who, where, when, and what, later in the complaint, we have, this is consistent with the standing order signed by this same judge on page 8, we have the who, what, when, and what. We have the conditions that the judge in asbestos standing order would set out for all the cases, and the first time that we had done this because of all the foreign cases, what had to be in each complaint. And we have the standing order in our requirements. In conclusion, this is a case that is no different than ICEN, no different than any other case, which has DuPont is providing safety services. They could have done it on a volunteer basis or be paid, but DuPont does not have to control the plant and still be liable. All the stuff in terms of DuPont having to parachute in and all of these things are simply hyperbole, conjecture. We have to deal with the record. The record here is consistent with other cases that we had, and for all those reasons, this case should be reversed and allow these people their day in court. Thank you.
Thank you both for your arguments. The court will take the matter under advisement and recess.